ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
There was a chook who was left something like 10 million pounds in a will. She was called Jiju, but she was rich, so maybe posh, like Jiju. Anyway, does that mean I can leave my car to my cat or my daddo to my dog? What the Duck is presenting Nature's Most Wanted, the intersection of animals and the law. You know, pigs being tried for murder or ducks getting speeding tickets. What the Duck on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Facial recognition technology. Does it solve crimes? Can it prevent them from happening in the first place? And what happens when the algorithms go haywire?
These are high-stakes uses that have high risks attached to them.
Hi, Damien Carrick here. This is the Law Report on ABC Radio National. Today, we're not going into a deep dive into the many facial recognition technology systems that are used in Australia and by whom. Instead, we're asking some big picture questions about the pros and cons of facial recognition technology use by both police and by retailers. And these are questions currently being asked all around the world. In January, a 26-year-old software engineer was arrested in the UK for a burglary that took place in a city that he's never been to.
I was out working remotely that day. I heard a knock on the door. I went downstairs and two police officers were at the door. I immediately asked them, is everything okay? They said to me, it's Alvi, right? And I said, yes. And then I was arrested and they told me I'm under arrest under suspicion of burglary for an incident that happened in Milton Keynes.
Police identified Alvi Chowdhury as a suspect after facial recognition technology wrongly matched his photo with footage of another person of South Asian heritage at the crime scene.
They searched my property, asked for certain belongings that I might have had, complied with everything, and then I was taken to Hampshire Constabulary and held there for roughly 11 hours and was released the next day, early hours of the morning.
At 2 a.m., I believe. So you're in Southampton, which is a city on the south coast of the UK, in Hampshire. You mentioned Milton Keynes. That's a city about 150 kilometres, 100 miles north of where you are at, on top of London, right?
Indeed, yeah. It was quite concerning. I just assumed at that point, because they had clearly gotten the wrong person, I just assumed this would be a very quick and easy misunderstanding to resolve, but it turns out not to be.
So what did police tell you about why you were a suspect and what was the crime you were a suspect for?
So they wouldn't tell me anything until I had my interview, which was around midnight. I was arrested around 4 p.m., when I did have the interview, the only link they had me to the crime was essentially there was this footage and they showed me the suspect and their facial recognition system matched my custody photo from 4 years previously to the suspect. And that's the only thing they had. I had already knew this before the interview, obviously, because that could have been the only thing. I just assumed before I had seen the suspect, he must have looked very similar to what I had looked like. When I did see the footage, the suspect looked nothing like me. He was about 10 years younger than me, had no facial hair. Yes, South Asian heritage, but a different ethnicity.
And why did police have your photo on their database?
This is where it gets even more concerning. 4 years ago, I was on a night out while at university and I was attacked by a group of boys and we were falsely arrested that day for another attack that was unrelated to that. We were given an NFA. We were told...
What's an NFA?
It means no further action, sorry. And that basically means that you're not being charged. All your information, they take your DNA, they take your... a lot of your information and they tell you that all of this will be removed. The one thing they do not tell you is that your custody photo, that remains and that will only be removed if you specifically go to request that to be removed. Now, obviously, the psychology and the wording they use makes you think that everything would be removed. So it was only until I was arrested in January where I realized that custody photo was still on their system. It's quite unfortunate.
So the only reason they had your photo on their database was because you had been a victim of a crime 4 years earlier.
Exactly.
And what evidence or information did you give to police to explain to them that they had made a mistake?
I had an abundance of evidence because the burglary happened on a Monday, I believe. I think it was the 8th of December, and it happened at around 4 o'clock as well. And on that day, I was at work. I had all my team's messages. I had my bank statements that would have proved that I was in Southampton on the day of and timing of the alleged crime. I had numerous alibis. I was in work meetings throughout the day, and I had seen numerous colleagues. But the thing they kept saying to me was, there's no point me saying I have this abundance of evidence until I have this interview. But yeah, because of all of that, I thought it would be a very quick and easy misunderstanding to resolve. But no.
So what was the process by which you were identified? Presumably the facial recognition technology matched the photos in the database. So the CCTV footage from the burglary in Milton Keynes with your photo, which was on the database as a resident of Southampton, 150 kilometres away. But then presumably a police officer, when presented with the match, said, yes, this looks right, this looks plausible, let's go ahead and arrest this guy. So there was, what, a technology error, but also human error?
Yeah, I think it's more concerning that the police had used this technology error, but then also they claimed they reviewed it and they weren't able to determine if I was the person in the footage. Now, this is another issue in itself, which I can say nothing else about racial profiling here, because the suspect, again, apart from maybe the hair, everything else was different. The features were completely different. The age was completely different. Even in my custody photo, I had a full beard. And that suspect, he looked about anywhere between 16 to 18 years of age, and he had no facial hair. So that's what's even more frustrating from my side, is that it's so blatant. The police officers that did interview me, they were so blatant from their side. The police officers at Hampshire Constabulary, they were laughing because they couldn't really understand why they had chosen to arrest me, especially when the footage was so clear. The suspect, by the way, wasn't wearing a hood. There was nothing to cover his face. It was very clear footage. So you'd think it would have been even easier for them to be able to understand that we're not the same person.
And what do you know about the facial recognition system that is used by English police? I believe it's a German system. Do you know much about that?
I know how flawed the system is for people of ethnic minority backgrounds, and the police are aware of it as well. The interesting thing is, in response to my complaint to them, my initial complaint, they acknowledge that the facial recognition system that they use is flawed for people of ethnic minority backgrounds. But they said this is a statewide investigation and they don't need to investigate it. This is where it gets very concerning for people of South Asian heritage that are male. The error rate is 4%. Now, 4% in terms of software is extremely high. That's a 1 in 25. For black females, that's 9%. That's almost 1 in 10 requests being in error. Now, if you speak to any tech company in the world, they would never release a piece of software with 1 in 25 requests failing to prod. That would be a catastrophic failure and a massive bug on their side. So it's very concerning that the police are able to use such flawed software.
And I understand that police in the UK also use facial recognition technology in public locations. So it's not even just on private property.
Yeah, it's very concerning. Now, I'm all for innovation as a software engineer. I think when it is eligible to be used and the error rates are much below that, you can use it as a tool. Now, I would say even then, even if it was usable, you shouldn't use it to replace actual detective work. Now, when they had matched me to the suspect, they had access to my name, my date of birth, my location, a bunch of information. With that information, they could have searched my name. They could have done a simple Google search. Now, before all the journalism, the first thing that would have came up would have been my LinkedIn. From there, you could have had my career history. You could have done a risk assessment. Is this person likely to commit a burglary for £3,000? Is he likely to risk his, you know, his career for something of that? is anyone around him ever committed a crime? Has any of his family ever committed a crime? The answer would be no. And none of that, you know, risk assessment or any detective work was done, which is the frustrating thing from my side.
26-year-old British software engineer Alvi Chowdhury. And the error statistics quoted by Alvi are from a research report commissioned by the UK Home Office. Now, police forces in different jurisdictions use a range of different facial recognition systems. Last year, New South Wales police stopped using the Cognitech system, which identified Alvi. This is the Law Report on ABC Radio National. Today, looking at facial recognition technology. Here in Australia, it's also been in the news, but not because of criminal investigations. Rather, the Privacy Commissioner has just decided not to appeal a recent decision of the Administrative Review Tribunal that upheld the use of facial recognition technology by hardware giant Bunnings to screen customers entering its stores. Associate Professor Catherine Kemp leads the Public Interest Law and Tech Initiative at the University of New South Wales. Catherine, how does Bunnings use facial recognition technology?
So this was a case that a lot of people have probably been aware of by now, of Bunnings having taken that video in their stores of customers moving about the stores and done this for the purpose of identifying repeat offenders who were either people who were assaulting staff members in the store, acting aggressively, other criminal behaviour such as stealing products, resulted in Bunnings having a list of people of concern and using the images of these people to then attempt to match against the facial data of anybody in, you know, a certain number of stores, 60 stores, I believe it was, of Bunnings that had this facial recognition technology. And so that was in real time, taking the facial data of everybody in the store for the purpose of identifying these repeat offenders.
So it wasn't just taking a photo or even a little bit of CCTV. It was then from that information, extracting biometric information or harvesting biometric information and comparing it with biometric data, which was from these people that they'd previously identified as dangerous people who might have had a history of harming staff or other customers or maybe being shoplifters or engaged in refund fraud.
Yes, so it's that process of not only the traditional CCTV taking the film, but then using the facial data from that film to create those temporary facial scan data sets that were then compared against this list of repeat offenders, and then they would be deleted if there was no match after about 4 milliseconds was the estimate there. But then if they were identified as being one of the people on this list, then that facial image data would be captured and viewed by a human being in Bunnings security to then decide, is this one of the people of concern, and, you know, take action on that basis.
And presumably then remove them from the premises. Now, in 2024, the Federal Privacy Commissioner ruled that Bunnings could not do this. It was a breach of Australia's federal privacy principles. But Bunnings successfully appealed this ruling in the Administrative Review Tribunal. What was the gist of the tribunal's decision?
I will say for the Privacy Commissioner that Bunnings was only successful on one particular ground. So they lost on a number of other grounds. And I say that because I saw this case reported in the popular media as, you know, Bunnings is successful or Bunnings gets the go-ahead for its facial recognition technology and so forth. That was simplifying what happened before the Administrative Review Tribunal. But what Bunnings succeeded in on appeal was establishing that this practice of theirs fitted in what we call a permitted general situation as an exception to the usual privacy rules, in the sense that they were able to establish that this was a case of them having reason to suspect unlawful activity, and that in their reasonable belief, this collection and use of the facial data was necessary to take appropriate action in respect of this matter of repeat offenders. So it came down to this question of what's necessary and what's proportional in responding to the particular problem of repeat offenders in Bunnings stores. So importantly, it's very particular to the facts of this case.
So if I've got it right, the Australian Review Tribunal found that, yes, Bunnings had failed to comply with the Australian privacy principles because it failed to have an up-to-date policy. It was collecting information even for a few milliseconds without obtaining consent. And it was also failing to adequately notify individuals, even though there were sort of signs saying video surveillance may include facial recognition, but that really wasn't enough. But even though it was found to have failed on all these scores, the tribunal found Bunnings still had a legitimate reason to do what it did. It was legitimately and proportionately concerned with the safety of its workers and customers, as well as addressing this theft and refund fraud. And that was enough to get it over the line.
Yeah, so on this particular issue, it's really important to bear in mind that the test that I was just mentioning is not an objective test of whether, in fact, objectively speaking, this handling of data is necessary to take appropriate action. It's a test of whether that entity, that company, reasonably believes that it's necessary to take appropriate action. And for those purposes, the Administrative Review Tribunal said that it was important to consider these three factors of the suitability of the action that was taken, the alternatives that were available to the company in addressing a concern of repeat offenders, and the proportionality of their conduct in collecting and using this facial data. And that entails that balancing of the privacy impacts of what they're doing against the benefits gained by using this FRT to address the problem of repeat offenders.
So recently, the Federal Privacy Commissioner announced that she would not appeal the decision that went in favour of Bunnings. I know you see it as more nuanced than that, but she made the point that this didn't give a green light to the use of facial recognition by retailers. Do we know now, though, how widespread the use of facial recognition is by retailers here in Australia?
I don't know of data on that, on the prevalence of that use, but we know that Bunnings was certainly not alone in this, and that there seem to have been a number of companies who feel encouraged by this decision, which they should approach with some circumspection, because it was certainly this progressive test that the Administrative Review Tribunal set down of working out these questions of suitability and the availability of alternatives and proportionality. So it shouldn't be seen as, you know, opening the gate for retailers in general to say, right, we have thefts and we have concerns about shoplifting, so we have the green light now to use FRT.
One thing that stood out for me in the decision was, well, Bunnings argued that, you know, look, a lot of the products that we sell can be used as weapons because, you know, it's a hardware chain. Would that perhaps separate it from, say, other forms of retail where you're just buying a T-shirt?
Yeah, certainly you can do a lot less with a T-shirt than you can with a screwdriver or a drill. So that was one of the factors that was taken into account with was what kind of violence could be done with the products that are sold there, as well as the layout and size of the stores, which make it quite difficult to be physically surveilling customers, and the unique threats that had been established in terms of those repeat offenders and the assaults on staff members at Bunnings.
Now, Catherine, there was a case recently in the UK of a similar facial recognition system used by the supermarket chain Sainsbury's, and it involves a Mr. Warren Rajah. Well, what do we know about that case?
This is a slightly different one. Again, it's a case of using facial recognition technology to try and identify a concerning person. But here the staff approached this man and decided he had been flagged as a person of concern and made him leave his shopping right there and get out of the store, even though he'd been shopping there for years. Ultimately, it was determined that this was staff misusing the technology and approaching the wrong customer and emphasizing that it's not just the technology that can get it wrong in some cases itself, as we know, but that you have user error that's added to this and that there can be this overconfidence in organizations believing both that there's a certain magic to the capabilities of FRT at the same time as feeling overconfident in the way they're using it. And clearly there was a gap here between even the identification and the approaching the right person in the store.
So Sainsbury's facial recognition system, I think it's called FaceWatch, identified a shoplifter in the store or somebody who had a history of, had a problematic history with the chain. At that point, the store staff then mistook Mr. Raja for the person in the image and asked him to leave, when in fact the other person who was identified by the FRT was probably in two aisles down the store.
Yeah, that's what they say has actually happened in this case. And to add insult to injury, when they sent Mr. Raja off to FaceWatch, telling him go deal with the facial recognition technology company, then he was told he needed to hand over his name and a copy of his passport to basically clear himself. So you're being required to essentially establish your innocence after being wrongly identified and to hand over this private information to an entity that you might have and validly would have no trust in at all.
Catherine, another Englishman who's lost trust in the use of facial recognition technology is software engineer Alvi Chowdhury. He wasn't denied entry to a store. He was rather arrested by police for a burglary that took place in a city that he's never been to after facial recognition technology wrongly matched him with footage of another person of South Asian heritage taken at the crime scene. Now, moving across the Atlantic, there's also the case of Tennessee grandma Angela Lipps, who was jailed for 6 months after AI-based facial recognition mistakenly identified her as a suspect in a North Dakota bank fraud investigation. What do we know about what happened in her case?
Yeah, this is pretty extraordinary that you have police, not even in the same state that she was based in, because as you say, this grandmother, this Miss Lipps, she was from Tennessee and she was at home in Tennessee when police arrested her at gunpoint for this suspected bank fraud, which was something which had taken place in North Dakota.
Presumably it's thousands of kilometres away.
Yeah, somewhere that she said she had never been before. And despite her at the time babysitting four kids, as she said, and she was without any warning taken away at gunpoint and put in jail first in Tennessee and later transported off to North Dakota for a total period of 6 months, all on the basis of this facial recognition software identifying her as the person who was supposedly engaged in this bank fraud. And again, the detective determining in his view that, yes, he believed that her facial features, her body type, her hairstyle all matched the suspect. And so they decided we've got our perpetrator.
And how was her lawyer able to convince the North Dakota Fargo police to release her?
He ultimately established through her own bank records that she couldn't have been in North Dakota at the time of this fraud. And so she was ultimately released, but released 6 months after this, you know, 6 months in jail, during which time she'd lost her home and her car and her dog and just had such severe harm as a result of this misidentification via facial recognition.
And Catherine, you know, cycling back to where we started, do we know if police are using this kind of technology here in Australia the way they are in the UK and the USA?
We don't know for sure, and certainly I'm not an expert in what the police are doing with this in Australia and at the different levels of law enforcement in Australia to identify people or verify identities. But we do know that there have been uses in the past of certain commercially available facial recognition systems for the purposes of police identifying potential suspects.
So what do you think we need to get right here in Australia as this technology becomes more and more ubiquitous?
I think there are a couple of things. One is to understand the limits of the technology, that it is not a magic thing that is always going to be superior in its analysis and judgment to a human being, and that when it's used for, you know, very serious purposes of identifying people of concern, potential offenders, that these are high-stakes uses that have high risks attached to them, and that we shouldn't be putting convenience and so-called efficiency over the rights and interests of these people. There should be a human in the loop, and there should be far more caution in the use of the technology in the first place. One of the things that I was a little disappointed about in the Administrative Review Tribunal judgment in Bunnings was that at that stage of determining the proportionality of the use of this technology, there's supposedly this balancing of the impact on the privacy of individuals versus the benefits gained by using the facial recognition technology. And what I noticed was that there was an acknowledgement that it has a serious impact on individuals' privacy, but that was dealt with very briefly and without an in-depth explanation or examination of it, exactly how it affects individuals' privacy and our public interest in privacy, and far more time spent on the other side considering the evidence of the benefits of using the facial recognition technology.
And indeed, there are very strong arguments on both sides of the ledger.
Yeah, absolutely, because sometimes this can be really important in if it helps us to identify violent offenders, for example, and to actually correctly apprehend people who might have committed violent crimes or who might be repeat offenders. So it's certainly not the case that we should say it should never be used and it will be of no assistance. But I think at present, we're not taking enough precautions and there's not enough consideration of the downside of the use. And we should be hoping that entities, you know, government agencies and companies, retailers and so forth, aren't taking too much encouragement from their impression that facial recognition was somehow given a green light in this Bunnings decision.
Associate Professor Catherine Kemp, who leads the University of New South Wales Public Interest Law and Tech Initiative. Thank you. Thank you for speaking to the Law Report.
That's only a pleasure.
That's all we've got time for this week. Do follow the Law Report on ABC Listen. That way you'll get the latest podcast as soon as it becomes available. A big thank you to producer Christina Kukolia and also to audio producer Tim Simons. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk soon.